07-2609 Clear Channel Outdoor Inc. versus the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades.
Good morning, Mr. Plosa. Good
morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Glenn Plosa. I represent the appellants in this case, Clear Channel Outdoor. This is my first time arguing a case before the Seventh Circuit. I'm honored to be here and look forward to presenting our case to you.
We're honored to have you here.
Thank you.
And we'll try to be gentle with everyone.
There are 3 points that I'd like to make today with regard to Arbitrator Dichter's decision. The first is that his decision did not draw its essence from the collective bargaining agreement.
You know, I'm glad you started out there because we may disagree with the arbitrator's analysis here, but in what sense can we say that he was not interpreting and applying the CBA?
I think you're referring to a plain meaning exception, and that's not at all what we're trying to argue here today.
No, I think to what Judge Rovner is talking about is exactly, that's why I opened my appendix to the arbitration opinion. When I read this opinion, it looked to me as though in his discussion section, he's working through, you know, Section 3 of Article 6, and he's working through Article 14, and he sees some tension amongst the different articles, and he resolves in a certain way. And, you know, I may entirely agree with you that he didn't do it the right way. Maybe we ought to knit these things together differently. But as you have conceded, you know, making a mistake isn't a reason to set aside an arbitration award. It sure looks to me like he's conscientiously trying to weave his way through these various provisions.
I direct you to Ethelcorp. And in that case, the court stated that the test is whether the arbitrator had exceeded the powers that the parties delegated to him.
But they delegated to him the power to interpret the CBA. And that's what he's doing. They didn't say, asterisk, unless you make a mistake, in which case you no longer have the authority.
Well, we would argue, with all respect, that he modified the collective bargaining agreement, and in so doing, exceeded the authority that the parties had
but
bargained.
But you could say that in every single case where an arbitrator comes up with an interpretation of a provision that isn't the one that you think is the correct one.
I think the facts in this case are different from many of the cases that stand for that proposition, because in this case, the parties went to great lengths to explicitly define just cause. The arbitrator went through a lot of what I will call legal gymnastics to try and create the just cause standard when there was really no need for him to do that. In the contract, I believe it's Article 4, Section 4, yes, Article 6, rather. I'm on the wrong section.
No, I know. You've made this argument. I think it's Article 4 that you're looking for. Yeah. But he thinks and says on page 8 of his opinion, just cause is a provision in the agreement that the arbitrator is being asked to interpret. He goes on to say arbitrators have struggled with this for years and so on. So I don't know where even overlooking a provision is something. How do we draw the line? The next arbitration case that comes along when somebody thinks, the arbitrator should also have looked at article such and such. Are we now going to review and second guess every arbitration outcome?
No, I think that the Supreme Court's made that exceedingly clear that that's not the role of the court in this case. I would direct you to Article 6, Section 4. And in this case, the arbitrator didn't even address this provision of the contract. He didn't give any explanation as to why he wasn't overlooking is the word that you would use. I would say ignored this provision.
He puts it forth in his
statement of relevant
his
provisions.
His statement of relevant provisions. And so, again, I would ask you, are you asking us to serve as sort of the editors-in-chief of arbitrator opinions and say, you forgot to discuss this point?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, I would say that the arbitrator, yes, in so many words.
That's the beginning and the end. I mean, that.
If I may. The reason.
Power, but not.
Yeah, well. I'm just saying, you know, then we're out of the ball game. We can't go as far as you want us to go.
In this instance, I would argue that the arbitrator ignored this provision of the contract. There is not even any explanation in the opinion as to why.
Look, by submitting to the arbitrator the question of the appropriate remedy, the company implicitly agreed that the arbitrator had the authority to reject the penalty that had been imposed and to choose a different one. And that's the box that you're in, although you're doing a valiant job and no one would ever guess it was your first time.
I'd argue, Your Honor, that the issue of the propriety of the discipline is a question that's only addressed if a threshold has been met, namely whether or not just cause existed for the company to discharge Mr. Rogney. And I think that due to the company and the union explicitly stating that failure to follow safety rules.
But the parties actually agreed to submit that cause to the that question to the arbitrator too. The first issue is, did the employer have just cause to discharge the grievant? Now, you may have felt that you had a very strong position that the answer was yes, but you did submit that question to the arbitrator.
That's correct, and the arbitrator concluded that Mr. Rogney had violated the safety rule.
He concluded that he finds some room between cause and just cause, and he thinks, again, you know, maybe wrongly, I'm not taking position on that, that just cause, which is a term of art in collective bargaining agreements and in labor law as a whole, hasn't been shown, and since he finds the answer to that question is no, then he moves on and changes the remedy.
And he created a remedy that doesn't exist under the contract using the part of the contract that he claimed was ambiguous and gave him personally the authority to step in the shoes of the company.
Well, the contract certainly recognizes that discipline other than termination is possible.
Correct, Your Honor. But however, the provision of the contract that he concluded was ambiguous and gave him the ability to step in the shoes.
Well, he looked at that may language, you know.
And it doesn't say that the arbitrator may, in his discretion, talk to him. I would argue that
it means that in some cases a lesser penalty may be appropriate.
And in that situation, and in this situation, the arbitrator used his own brand of industrial justice based on his own personal notions of fairness. And he talked about how the company reviewed the situation for 8 minutes and didn't take immediate action against Mr. Rogney right then and there on the spot.
Well, I think he was a little offended at the thought of this person sitting there watching this man hanging up on the billboard and thinking, aha, I'll catch you for a contract violation instead of...
And then driving off.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
But there's no provision in the contract that says...
Well, that Superman is up there.
There's no provision in the contract that calls for the company having to make a decision within 8 minutes.
That's not the point, though.
No, not the point. The point is, here's a serious violation. Somebody had just died from this. He leaves. All this time lapses. The guy is up there swinging in the wind, basically, and nothing. I mean, the arbitrator could take that into account. You know, if this is so egregious and the company is so worried about it, why wasn't there an immediate response? I mean, that's what I think he was taking into account when he was balancing the appropriate penalty.
I mean, common sense itself, you'd start screaming if you saw someone up there like that.
And I believe that the appendix reflects that Mr. Serra couldn't believe what he was seeing, given the fact that someone had died a year earlier.
What?
And Mr. Serra wanted to make very, very sure that what he was seeing was actually what he was seeing. So he looked at it from another angle to make sure that, in fact, this gentleman was not hooked up. So that is the explanation that I would give you as to why the company didn't take immediate action. Mr. Serra is the branch president.
You're in your rebuttal. You want to finish your thought.
Mr. Serra was the branch president. He called Mr. Shane Holtz, who was the operations manager, the direct supervisor of Mr. Serra.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Plosa. And Ms. Quindell.
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I'm Barbara Zach Quindell, representing the Appellee Union in this matter. I think the law in this circuit, the law of the Supreme Court, is exceptionally clear. And as your questions indicate, this is not at all a question of failure to interpret. This is an easy roadmap. All of Clear Channel's arguments to date have been disagreements with the way in which the arbitrator ruled here.
But, you know, it's easy to see how they might be doing that, because the language of this particular collective bargaining agreement and the management rights provision, and particularly the fact that the collective bargaining agreement goes so far as to single out this exact problem as a reason that would warrant immediate dismissal, puts this in that class of cases, if we were to leave this alone, where you say, boy, the arbitrator didn't just make a mistake, the arbitrator made a whopping mistake, but we aren't the ones, if that's what we have to do, that's what we'll do. But I can certainly see where the company is concerned about this.
I can certainly see that the company passionately disagrees that arbitrator Dichter didn't find the argument that the company made.
I think arbitrator Dichter engaged in circular reasoning, to tell you the truth. But just because he reasons wrongly doesn't mean he isn't trying to interpret the contract. I understand that. But he winds up saying, I'm going to find no just cause if I think it wasn't really all that serious a violation. And so he finds it's not just cause, and that paves the way to the remedy.
Well, Your Honor, I submit, I think he starts the analysis precisely grappling with the contradiction he sees between, on the one hand, the conditional language of may be immediately discharged, and how do I give meaning to another section of the contract, which is independent and states a discharge or discipline can only be for just cause? And he's grappling with perhaps the very issue that you're raising. Is this a contract that precludes me from doing a full just cause analysis? And before he gets to applying the facts to that analysis, he concludes that there's too much ambiguity here and that the just cause provision must be given some meaning, and traditionally just cause provisions imply not only just cause for was there a violation, but also what is the appropriate penalty. And it's only when he gets to that point, because of course the violation was never at issue here, it's only when he gets to that point of determining, yes, I have the power under this agreement and I'm under my authority to interpret the contract as to what the penalty should be, that I can go and analyze that. And
how, I think, under this contract could he possibly have concluded that failing to attach yourself to the safety line wasn't just cause for immediate termination? I mean, the contract looked awfully clear to me.
Well, Your Honor, I submit that's why there's an arbitration provision, because these parties chose arbitration to resolve their dispute. And this is now a third-tier proceeding where we're before this court on something that was agreed by the parties to be final and binding, an arbitrator's award. So with all due respect, however it would appear to a reviewer after the fact, is not really the question our Supreme Court and circuit says we have to look to.
Well, how did the arbitrator determine that a six-month suspension would be appropriate when that penalty is not listed in the contract?
This is something arbitrators are frequently called upon to do, and the submission by the parties gave them that authority, said if he doesn't find just cause, first of all, then what should be the remedy? It happened in the Woolworth case. It happened in the Arch case. It happened in the Misko case. I mean, all of the disciplinary cases we see, the arbitrators are given broad remedial powers precisely because the parties can't anticipate every situation and what should it be. In Arch, there's an interesting discussion about, is it either or? Either I find no just cause to discharge and award no penalty whatsoever, or is there a basis for awarding penalties? And arbitrators typically will, once they have the just cause authority, part of that is the remedial authority to find a commensurate penalty with the evidence. And here he took into account the typical factors of length of service, work record, and the nature and seriousness to come up with his severe six-month suspension. For these reasons, because I think the bar is so very high and vacating an arbitration award is highly unusual, There's no basis here, and I believe there has been no basis for the appeal as well. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Plaza, 1 minute. We'll give you two.
If I may,
I feel like I'm giving gifts, 1 minute.
They are gladly received. If I may, the issue that I spoke to earlier where I was asking you to stand in the shoes of the arbitrator and usurp his judgment, I want to make it very clear that when I said that, I was referring to the issue where the provision of the contract that he did not address. He didn't talk about that issue of the contract. He ignored it. And as a result, I think that this Court is empowered to say that because Arbitrator Dichter ignored the specific provision of the contract that defines just cause, this Court can review his decision and can vacate his award. And I'd like to talk a little bit about his decision, specifically page 11 of the supplemental appendix. The arbitrator went to great lengths to talk about all the things that did exist. He talked about failure to hook up is far more than a small mistake. He said treating the offense as grounds for a discharge is understandable, given the history. He said that discharge may very well have been proper. Then he adds his own version of industrialized justice. That is offensive to the contract. That is not what the parties agreed to. That's not what was the bargain for benefit of this collective bargaining agreement. Again, the parties define just cause because, as Judge Wood recognized, that's an amorphous, rather undefined term. The arbitrator also talked, as I mentioned earlier, about the company ignoring, in his words, the safety aspects. Everything from that is a derivative error on the part of the arbitrator. And what I mean by that is that he created a new obligation under the contract and as a result based the rest of his decision on that derivative error. And I respectfully point the Court to the case of Judson Rubber Works. It's a Northern District of Illinois case, 89, Fed Sup at 1065, where the Court recognized that a derivative error was grounds to vacate the arbitrator's award. And I'd also respectfully point the Court to Young Radiator Company, where I think that the facts are virtually analogous to this case. My time is up.
Thank you so much. To both counsel, the case will be taken up.